You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
Turned my mic on. Good. I thought I didn't. I can't really see here. Oh, wait. What just happened? Why did it get so dark up here? Hey, we're back. All right. No, we're not. All right. Why don't you click the next slide? Hey, there we go. All right. Well, good morning. We are coming to this, maybe the third? Yeah, there we go. Anyway, we're the third of this series. It's about the Israelites, and we will talk more about them in a second. But I'm going to be doing an experiment, and we actually have the splash zone signs there. I don't think it'll be an issue, but if it is, run, okay? And when I say experiment, I didn't practice this ahead of time. So I'm doing a thing, all right? And so I'm supposed to take a half cup of hydrogen peroxide. Sticky thing here. Half cup of hydrogen, that's hydrogen peroxide. By the way, did you know that hydrogen peroxide degrades in light, and that's why it's always in a brown bottle? Because if it's out in sunlight, it will actually not be peroxidated, or maybe not hydrogenated, or hydrogen, it will be something else. It might just be water, I think is actually what happens. It turns to, because this is currently H2O2, and if you let it sit in the sun, it turns into H2O, also known as dirt. No. All right. Okay, so I start with a half cup of hydrogen peroxide. Now, what do I do? One tablespoon. Okay, no, that's still later. Pour the hydrogen peroxide into the empty bottle. Oh, dang. Oh, that didn't work so well. I'll have to add some more. I lost a little bit there. Okay. Seriously, I was supposed to pour that in. I actually remembered that I needed a funnel. Once we were already here. So, okay, half cup of hydrogen peroxide, empty bottle. Okay, good. 10 drops of food coloring. There's food coloring. 10 drops. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Oh, that was 11. Oh, boy. Okay. I'm actually not trying to screw this up. That's not part of the shtick. I'm just that incompetent. I can't even say incompetent. I'm incompetent, not incontinent. That's totally different. That would be a different mess. Okay. Anyway, focusing. What am I doing? 10 drops of food coloring did that. Next, you will mix in 1 tablespoon of liquid dish soap. How am I supposed to get that in there? Funnel. 1 tablespoon liquid dish soap. Okay. Oh, I'm dripping. Okay. Boring. Oh, I really didn't make it there. That'll get back in there. That's not quite a tablespoon either. We'll have to add a little more. By the way, I don't cook at home. I reheat. We make, Wednesday night is kind of our night for me and Kendra to, we have popcorn and watch TV after band practice. And my job is to put the butter in the microwave. She makes it from, does the pan thing. That's the best I can get. Okay, so that's about right. I'm going to clean this off because it's looking messy. Okay. Oh, and that's peroxide. Okay. Okay. We don't want to bleach anything. Okay. Okay, we did that. 1 tablespoon of this. Okay, I have to swish it around. This will do something. That feels like I swished it. Ooh, the bubbles. I don't think it's supposed to explode. Okay. Now, in a separate cup. Aha, I've got that ready. Combine warm water and yeast. And I brought scissors because I was prepared to cut this open. I'm not that incontinent. Okay, pour that in. What I don't know is that this is instant yeast and then there's other not instant yeast. But I'm supposed to... that's got a smell. I'm supposed to mix it for 30 seconds. So 1, two, three, oh, it's chunky. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. Hey, count with me. This will be fun. 18, 19, 18, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, oh wait, 26. We're going to 30, 7, 28, 29, 30. Okay, there's still some crud on this spoon. I don't know if it's supposed to look like that. Is it supposed to be mashy like that? It's okay? Okay. Okay. All right. So I did that. Okay, now I'm pretty sure I'm supposed to put this out of the way. And let's get the good scissors out of the way. Let's get that here for later. Okay. Now I'm supposed to pour this into this. Seriously, this is the run part. He wasn't in here for that. Run if necessary. That's really boring. Maybe I'm supposed to swish it around some more?
Should I run?
quick, head for the doors. Oh, dear. Oh, no. All is lost. Oh, the humanity. Well, there's a reaction there. Okay, so we'll give you that. I probably could have done that just by shaking up a bottle of soda. But yeah, that was supposed to be elephant. Oh, it's starting to look like elephant toothpaste. There, now look at it. There it was for a moment. It was elephant toothpaste. Or maybe not elephant, maybe like large ape. Maybe a large dog. Toothpaste for a large dog. That was really disappointing. Mark Rober. Psh, he doesn't. I guess I need to do it bigger. All right, so next time, we're going to do the world's largest. No. Anyway, so yeah, with a chemical reaction like that, that's actually science going on there. And it has to do with the bubbles of the peroxide with the yeast acting on it and doing that thing that looks so spectacular. Rumor has it that it's actually supposed to be warm, too, because it causes an exothermic reaction. Ooh, yeah, you hear that word? Not sure what it means, but it's excellent. Okay, so here's the thing about a chemical reaction. And apparently I did not get the right size lab coat. I thought this was a different one. So I'm going to take this off because it's also warm, because I also need you to see, you know, something else here. You know, I know there's a game tonight of some sort, but it doesn't feature the New York Giants. They get the draft. That'll be exciting for them, theoretically. So anyway, the thing about an experiment is you combine all of these elements and it creates a chemical reaction. And the thing about this reaction, which wasn't as spectacular as I had hoped, and they said something about, well, measurements probably would have mattered. But you know, when you put all these elements together, there's nothing to stop the reaction. It's just part of science. And I'm sure there's smart people that could explain why. But if you didn't want this reaction to happen, what you do is you remove some of the elements. Because, you know, yeast, obviously we eat bread, and yeast is a part of bread, and it doesn't explode in blue, and, you know, food coloring obviously was to make it look so spectacular. You know, you use dish soap, and you use peroxide. Like, all these things themselves are fine, but you combine them, and they become this amazing reaction. And the way to stop the reaction is just to remove some of the elements. And we're going to talk about that because Moses had a situation in his life as we're looking here at the book of Numbers. And he had a problem when the combination of elements led to a reaction for him that forever changed his life. And so we're going to get to that in a moment. But the point we're looking at today is this. When you're stuck with frustration, you should avoid reaction. You should avoid reaction. So again, as I said, we're kind of on the last third of this series, looking at the book of Numbers. And the book of Numbers tells the journey of the Israelites that kind of ended, at the end of the book of Exodus. They had just gotten out of Egypt, gotten out of slavery. There was the 10 plagues. They crossed the Red Sea on dry land. And then God gave them the 10 commandments at the top of Mount Sinai. And they were getting ready to go into this land that was the promise to their forefather, their great-great-great-great-grandfather, Abraham, about 500 years earlier. And they were getting ready to go in. And, of course, we talked about a couple of weeks ago. And as you saw in the intro video, God said, "Look, check out the land." And they're like, "No, there's no way we can do this. We can't take it over." And God's like, "You have me on your side." They're like, "No, no." And so God said, "Fine. As a punishment for you, you're going to wander in the desert intentionally, not lost, but on purpose, until that generation that did not have faith in God, until they die off. And your kids will then get to enter the promised land." And so they're stuck in the wilderness. And so that's where we are in the middle of all these stories of where they are in the book of Numbers. And so we've come across, there's a whole bunch of stories we're looking at. We're covering every chapter by the end of this month. But I want to look at these elements that caused Moses' reaction, the elements that were there for the reaction. And we're going to be in Numbers chapter 20. So if you want to hit the house lights there, if you've got a paper Bible, you can turn to Numbers. Oh, wrong one. Other way. Top row. There we go. Numbers, if you're in the YouVersion app, Numbers is Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, the fourth book down on the list, chapter 20. 20 comes after 19 and before 21, because I know these things. Yeah, that was right. And so we're looking at this story, but I want to show you the elements for this reaction that caused Moses to react. And I want you to see something here, and I don't need this. Or not see something, because you probably see this. As we read this story, as we look at it, your reaction to what's going to happen here is probably going to be, "Dude, God, cut Moses a break." That's going to be your reaction. And a lot of times that's our reaction to ourselves. Like, "Hey, I know I reacted to a situation, but come on. Did you see what they said? I know I didn't. I reacted in a way that I shouldn't have, but did you see what they did to me? Have you heard what happened to my family because of this person?" And we're going to justify our reaction. And again, as you look at this story with Moses, you're going to be like, "Dude, he has every reason to do what he did, except for one thing. That God wants our obedience because God is holy. And God wants what's best for us. And so anything that we do to follow him is always going to be for our benefit." So, the elements for the reaction. Now, they led to his reaction. The first thing we have is unfair badgering. Unfair badgering. And this is nothing new. Every week of this series, we have looked at a similar situation where the people complained to Moses about their situation. And so in Numbers chapter 20, verse 1, starting there, just as a little context, it says, "In the first month of the whole Israelite community arrived at the desert of Zin, and they stayed at Kadesh. There, Miriam died and was buried." So that's a side note, because it may factor into what we're about to see here. But Miriam was Moses and Aaron's sister. Remember, Aaron and Moses were brothers, and Miriam's her sister, and that's how they work. And so Moses' sister was Miriam, and Aaron's sister was Miriam, and Moses' brother was Aaron, and Miriam's brother was also Aaron, because they're related. And so Miriam's dead. And so that's where it starts. And then it says, "Now there was no water for the community, and the people gathered in opposition to Moses and Aaron. They quarreled with Moses and said, 'If only we had died when our brothers fell dead before the Lord. Why did you bring the Lord's community into this wilderness that we and our livestock should die here? Why did you bring us up out of Egypt to this terrible place? It has no grain or figs, grapevines or pomegranates, and now there's no water to drink.'" And again, like, this is a new chapter. This is a new part of the story. This isn't what we looked at last week or what we looked at 3 weeks ago, even though it's the same complaints. And the people are complaining to Moses, and they blame him. And they remember last week, if you weren't here, you got to watch it online, listen to it on our website. But the ground ate people. That doesn't happen. Like, there's earthquakes, and I understand there was an earthquake yesterday out in the Cayman Islands. But that doesn't go and close back up. Like, that's just not how it works. And yet the people still were complaining. But again, you can listen to that last week. But the people were complaining to Moses. They quarreled with him. And the word there actually means, it's a word that's also used as a Hebrew word, because that's the language that they spoke and wrote in the time of Numbers. And the word actually also is used to be in fight, to be in a combat, to be in a battle. And so this is the same word. Like, this wasn't like, Moses, hey, we're a little upset. They're like angry again and blaming Moses for this. And as we have seen from the beginning of this story in January, last month, that Moses isn't the one doing these things, but he's the one that has to deal with it. In the second week of the series, we did talk about perseverance and how Moses had to stand up to perseverance, even from his own brother and sister. And so we look at it as like, okay, that's not really fair. He is continually getting abused, getting verbally beat up, getting, you know, people are talking about killing him at different times, all for him doing what God told him to do. Because as remember, Moses isn't leading these people through the desert. There is a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. And maybe you'd be like, during the day, be like, oh, it's just a wisp of cloud, you know. No, it was probably something really big and spectacular. That was the Lord of the Rings reference. Big and spectacular. And then you kind of can't be like, oh, okay, yeah, that fire burning in the sky is normal. Like, that's just not that way. So God has been leading there, and they're at this spot, and there is no water, and they say, Moses, this is your fault. We're tired of your leadership. And again, this is not new. This has been happening over and over and over. So if you were in Moses' situation, you'd be like, come on, this isn't even fair. And they keep badgering me. They keep beating up on me. They keep getting on me. I'm tired of this. That's probably how you would respond. And it's happened over and over. But the situation, no matter what it is no excuse for disobedience. God wants our full obedience because God wants what's best for us. And obviously, you know, if we had a good reason and did things whenever we want, as long as we have a good reason, like, this world would be chaos. It kind of is chaos because people live like that. But the idea of saying, well, as long as I have a good reason, it's okay. No, it's not. So that was the first element, was this unfair badgering. Nothing new, but, you know, maybe you're getting a little tired of it, Moses. The second thing is what I'm calling unintentional listening. Because there's a way to listen, and I guess you could even use the term, you know, you can hear things, but not listen. And, you know, I don't know if you've had conversations with people or if you're one of those people, they're like, And then either you go later and say, like, and I've done this, like, hey, what happened to the food? I just told you about that about 5 minutes ago. Oh, okay, I wasn't really listening. Or, you know, it's fun sometimes talking to people and watching them go, you know, and then it sinks in what they said, and they're like, oh, okay, right, that's important. Like, yes, that's important. But so there's a difference between unintentional and intentional listening. And Moses was not listening intentionally, and it's probably because of a previous experience. And so we're going to go back in time to Exodus. In Exodus chapter 17, this is right after they came out of Egypt. They're getting ready to go to Mount Sinai, where God's going to give them the Ten Commandments. So we're within the first few days or weeks of leaving Egypt, getting to Mount Sinai, right after, you know, crossing the Red Sea and the whole deal. And they get to this spot, and it says the people were thirsty for water there because there was no water. And they grumbled against Moses. So again, this is even not in Numbers. We haven't looked at this, but they were grumbling as soon as they got out of Egypt. They just crossed the Red Sea on dry ground. And they're complaining against Moses. And they said, why did you bring us up out of Egypt to make us and our children and livestock die of thirst? Like, this is years later that we're reading in Numbers. This is years earlier in Exodus. Same story. It says, then Moses cried out to the Lord, what am I to do with these people? They're almost ready to stone me. The Lord answered Moses, go out in front of the people. Take with you some of the elders of Israel and take in your hand this staff with which you struck the Nile. Context, that from the very beginning was one of the first plagues where Moses touched the Nile with his staff and the Nile turned to blood. The entire river, everything about it turned to thick, syrupy, nasty blood. And so it was that staff. He said, take your staff with you and go. I will stand there before you by the rock at Horeb. And then he says, strike the rock, and water will come out of it for the people to drink. So Moses did this in sight of the elders of Israel. So Moses goes up, takes the staff, whack, the rock gushes out water, and there's enough for the entire Israelite nation. We're talking probably millions of people, possibly, out of this rock. Because he struck it and did what God told him to do, strike the rock. Okay, so that's context. That happened to Moses, you know, years earlier, a few years earlier. So, jumping back to Numbers, the next verse then, it's after the people were complaining, it says, Moses and Aaron went from the assembly to the entrance of the tent of meeting, or the tabernacle, which is where God's presence dwelt in that pillar of cloud, pillar of fire. And again, when the cloud or fire moved, it was time for them to go. Otherwise, God's presence was above that. And this isn't in the loop for the slideshow, but we did a series called Dwell All About the Tabernacle way back in the early days. But the glory of the Lord appeared to them. They went, they fell down yet? They fell face down, and the glory of the Lord appeared to them. The Lord said to Moses, take the staff, okay? Sound familiar? Take the staff, and you and your brother Aaron gather the assembly together. Speak. Different word here. The other one was strike. The other one was hit. The other one was to whack it. This time he's told to speak to that rock before their eyes, and it will pour out its water. You will bring water out of the rock for the community so that they and their livestock can drink. All this talk of water. So God says to Moses, yeah, I'm going to provide for you. You're going to go and speak to that rock. But Moses might have been a little bit distracted by the people. He might have been, you know, remembering his previous experience in a almost identical situation where he had to strike the rock. But he wasn't listening. He wasn't really paying attention. And his anger might have clouded his judgment. Who knows? Like, this is just my assumption. But we know that he didn't listen to God, as we'll see in a moment. But he didn't actually listen. He was kind of like, yeah, okay, God, yeah, right. Rod, rock, water, yep, I got it. Uh-huh. I got it. Leave me alone. Okay, I'm good. Like, and maybe that's not how he responded, because he was face down. So I was like, okay, leave me alone. But the point was that God told him this, and he wasn't listening. And that's still no excuse for disobeying God's instructions. And, you know, we again, like to throw on excuses like, oh, but man, I wasn't really paying attention. I didn't know that was in there. I didn't know that's what they meant. And we have all these excuses, but that doesn't change our need to be obedient. And then finally, so we've got the unfair badgering, the unintentional listening. And again, we're kind of like, hey, you know, give him a break, God. He'd already done this before. You know, he probably wasn't paying attention. You know, there were some things going on. And that leads to the third thing, which was uncontrolled feeling. He was out of control emotionally. He was off the rails. He wasn't controlling all these emotions. And so as chapter 20 goes on in verse 9, it says, so Moses took the staff from the Lord's presence just as he commanded him. Okay, so far so good. He and Aaron gathered the assembly together in front of the rock. So far so good. And Moses said to them, listen, you rebels. Now, I want to do a timeout here. We didn't gloss over it. We didn't talk about it too much. But almost every time the Israelites complain to God, God's like, fine, I'll wipe them out and I'll start over with you, Moses. That's happened multiple times. And Moses is like, no, don't do that, God. Don't do that. I love these people. You know, you love these people. And God says, okay, yes. And there's a whole topic we could talk about with that. But the point is that Moses was standing up for the people. And this time, God was standing up for the people, and Moses calls them rebels. He is not happy. He is unhitched here. He is unhinged here. He says, listen, you rebels, must we bring you water out of this rock? He is angry. He is upset. And, you know, maybe it's justified. These people were complaining again. And, you know, he did this thing before. He wasn't really paying attention. Give him a break. Sometimes we don't pay attention. His sister just died. Did that factor into it? But what we know is it says, then Moses raised his arm, which he raised his arm. And there's something about this too. Raising your arm is a sign of power. Maybe that's what he was doing. Maybe it was just because he wanted to get a good old swing going on it. That would not be, what sport would swing like that? It would be a bad baseball swing, I'm sure. Golf, definitely not going to work very well. Badminton, yeah, maybe you're hitting it like that. Isn't there something where you like whack the ground and... Anyway, all right, so something like that, I'm sure. He was doing a little dance. And then he struck the rock twice with his staff. So Moses disobeyed God. And again, we might go, okay, it's been rough. God, give him a break. You know, he disobeyed. It's been a hard time. The people are complaining. And we might want to say, yeah, that's okay. But he disobeyed God. Now, what's interesting is that God is full of grace. And God could have done a number of things. He could have just been like, you're dead, Moses. He could have been like, nope, try again. But instead, he wanted to demonstrate that Moses is still my leader. So water gushed out of the rock. And God will do good things for us and does do good things for us even when we don't deserve it. So the water gushed out of the rock and the community and their livestock drank. So everyone got what they needed. It was all good. God came through. So Moses must be in the clear. Whew. He didn't realize maybe that he was reacting here. All the pieces came together and he had this reaction of disobedience. It looks like Moses is in the clear, even though there was unfair badgering, even though it was unintentional listening, and even though there was uncontrolled feeling. But this all led to the result. In Numbers chapter 20, verse 12, God pulls Moses aside, essentially. And he says to them, to him and Aaron in verse 12, but the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, because you did not trust in me enough to honor me as holy in the sight of the Israelites, I will not bring this community into the land I give them. We talked a couple weeks ago about the worst verse in the history of the United Kingdom, the United Nation of Israel, when God says, okay, turn around. And this is probably the worst verse in Moses' life. Because he had been leading these people, he did all these things, and God says, and you know what? You disobeyed me. And you're not going to get to go into the land either. Because earlier when God said that first generation is going to die off, he said, except for Moses and Caleb and Aaron and Joshua. Moses, Aaron, Joshua, and Caleb, because they were the two good spies. He says, now, Moses, you're not going to get to go into the land either. And in just that one moment, Moses lost all that had been promised to his great-great-great-great-great-grandparents, grandfather, Abraham. It was passed down from generation. One day, God's going to bring us into this land he's promised. One day, it's going to be a land flowing with milk and honey. One day, it's going to be amazing. One day, it's going to be incredible. And it went down and down. And finally, there's these 400 years of slavery in Egypt after the people came to Egypt because Joseph, their great-great-grandfather, saved them from a famine, and they're in slavery in Egypt going, but one day God's going to rescue us. One day God's going to deliver us into this promised land. It's going to be wonderful. And those are the stories that were told over and over and over. And the people disobeyed and they didn't get to make it, but Moses is going still until now. I was like, come on, God. Give a guy a break. Like, there was a lot going on here. The people were complaining again and again. I mean, his sister died. Maybe he wasn't actually paying attention. You're going to hold that against him? And the answer is yes. Because God is a God, a holy God. And that's what he says to Moses. He's like, you didn't honor me. You were busy showing your power and your hand and your staff and not really obeying. And I just want to, this isn't really part of what we're talking about, but incomplete obedience is disobedience. Like, mostly obeying God is still disobeying God. And, you know, we're Americans, and so we vote on things, and you guys get, I mean, the grading system is kind of rough. But, you know, if we're voting things, you know, 51% to 49%, that means someone's, you know, that means you get your way. And we look at God that way, kind of going like, yeah, 51%, God, I'm obeying 51%, that's pretty good. You know, if it's a grade, like, what do you have to get to pass? You got to get like a 70%, 70, something like that. And still, we make 70%. God, I'm passing. But obedience has to be 100% because anything less is disobedience. And so that's what happened here with Moses. He didn't obey God and he did not get to go into the land. And all of these elements came together and he reacted and lost the promised land. And as we wrap up this series, assuming there isn't any stupid snow, when we wrap up the series in a couple of weeks, there's going to be this beautiful moment where Moses is going to get to see the land and then die. Spoiler. He doesn't live forever. But God takes him to the top and says, there's the land. For the first time, he gets to see it. And then he dies there. But anyway, but he lost all of that because he was not willing to obey. And because he reacted in the midst of all that frustration. All those elements combined. You're like, yeah, come on, give Moses a break. No, God says, I'm holy. If that doesn't work that way. And ultimately, he says, yeah, I can't just give you a break. Instead, I'm going to break my son for you. Something has to die. Something has to suffer the consequences of our sin. So I'm sending my son Jesus to do that in your place. And we'll talk more about that next week. But I said we're going to cover every chapter in Numbers just because I want you to see the whole story fits together. And so the story is going to continue here. And it continues on with two things. First of all, in the rest or another part of chapter 20 here, it says the Edomites refused. They refused to let the Israelites pass. The Israelites say, hey, can we go through your land? And the Edomites said, no way. You're not going to come through. And Moses is like, oh, we're just going to stay on the path. We're not going to divert. No, no way. We're not going to water any of our animals or our livestock. We're not going to take any crops. Can we just go through? They said, no way. And you're like, what's the deal with these Edomites? Well, the Edomites are descendants of Esau. And the Israelites are descendants of Jacob. And if you were here for the Deceiver series, which is also on the loop here, that was a year ago, that Jacob and Esau, there became this tension that lasted for generations. And so the Edomites were just, the only reason they didn't let them go through the land is like, no, we're not going to help anybody that's a descendant of Jacob because Jacob stole our birthright and Jacob stole our blessing. And again, if you don't know what that means, last year we did a series called The Deceiver. It's on the loop. You can find it on our website and watch it, listen to it. But just for those of you that were here, there's a connection there. This is still there. This bitterness was still there. Some 300 years later, something like that. And then the next thing that happens in the story is Aaron's death. Is that God said to Moses and Aaron, you're not going to get to see the promised land. So God tells Moses and Aaron to go to the top of this mountain and bring Aaron's son, Eleazar. And Aaron dies at the top of the mountain. And Aaron was the high priest. He was the head worship leader of the Levites. They were the worship leaders around the tabernacle. And he said, okay, Aaron, we're going to pass this on to your son. So now his son Eleazar is the high priest. And I just wanted to say that because as you read through the rest of the book of Numbers, you'll be like, what happened to Aaron? Well, he's dead. Who is this Eleazar? He's Aaron's son. He's the next in line to be the head worship leader there. So that's how the story continued. But the point is that when you're stuck with frustration, you should avoid reaction. And again, we look at Moses' story and we say, like, you put all the elements together. It's going to happen. Give Moses a break. And how did we stop? Like, how would Moses have stopped that? And there's a whole lot more to the story of God and the Israelites. And God spoke directly to Moses in a burning bush. And, you know, God telling him to speak to a rock or lift a staff. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of pieces that aren't part of our normal daily life. But the one thing that is true about Moses, that would be true about Moses and true about this, is that if you didn't want the reaction to take place, you simply remove some of the elements. And so maybe if you and I were in Moses' situation, we would have reacted the exact same way. Maybe you have reacted in the same way and exploded and made an average bubbly mess. And you're like, well, I mean, God, give me a break. I mean, these things kind of came together. I couldn't have stopped it. I couldn't have avoided it. And that's essentially true. And so the answer is, how do we avoid reaction? Well, we get rid of some of the elements. And that's what we need to do. If you're a person that reacts, and maybe your reaction is an anger, which is an emotion, maybe your reaction is, you know, you're just if you're an angry person, you might just be a fight person. You're just going to get angry. You're going to explode on everybody. You're going to get foam everywhere. Maybe you're a flight person. You're a fight person, a flight person. Maybe you just run away. I'm not talking to them. I'm not going to talk to them ever again. Now, that's a reaction. That's an emotion. And just because you don't explode loud doesn't mean you're any less emotional. Maybe you just burst into tears and can't do anything. That's an emotion. That's a reaction. How do we avoid the reaction? It's by removing the elements. And so I'm going to suggest three things here that we can do, even though we're not in the desert, we don't have a staff, like a wooden stick, like you might have people that work under you. But that's a different kind of staff. Anyway, there's things we can do. The first thing is, how do we avoid unfair badgering? And I guess there's things here. Oh, I have some notes here. I should read them. How do we avoid? We avoid reaction by removing some of the elements, and it requires, sorry, we're getting ahead of myself. This is my bad. It requires a commitment, an accomplishment, and a mindset. I meant to say that before. A commitment, an accomplishment, and a mindset. And so if we want to avoid unfair badgering, how do we get rid of that element? Well, it requires a commitment. And that commitment is that we deal with anger today. We deal with frustration today. We don't bottle it up. We don't put it on some list and we're like, sweep it under the rug, it's fine. But the problem with sweeping under the rug is eventually you trip on the rug because the pile of stuff that's under it is so big and it all comes out everywhere, and then you do have a huge reaction. To avoid the reaction, deal with anger today. Not tomorrow, not later, today. Ephesians chapter 4, Paul says this to the church in Ephesus. He wrote a letter to them and he says, in your anger, do not sin. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. But he says, do not let the sun go down while you're still angry. What's he saying? He says, deal with it today. Don't be angry at someone and just kind of let it go or let it simmer and fester, because that is not good. And you're an idiot. Okay, maybe you're not, but I am. Because my brain will take things and just, if I just leave it unaddressed, my brain will eventually have you probably showing up to kill me at my house. Even though you were like, oh, that's fine, in a response to a text. What do they mean by that's fine? What does that mean? Why isn't it great? It's just fine? What do they think? I'm not a good leader? They have a problem with me? What are you saying? You think I'm a bad parent? You don't like my marriage? Oh, you're going to get me fired, aren't you? You're done with me. You want me out of this job, and you hate me. You're going to show up at my house and kill me. Like, and you're like, that's so dumb. I can't believe you do that. And I bet you do similar things. And so the issue is, Paul says, don't let the sun go down. Deal with it today. Address it. And, you know, sometimes that doesn't always happen. Sometimes that can't always happen. But deal with it. If there's a way to say, hey, you know what? When you said that thing, it really bothered me. Or, hey, I'm sorry that I said that to you. Rather than letting it fester and build up and grow, because that element will give you what you need for a reaction. And Paul says with it, he says, don't let the sun go down while you're still angry, and do not give the devil a foothold. Paul is saying that our unwillingness to address issues of anger is exactly what Satan wants. He'd love to tear down the church, the body of Christ, because he's talking to a church. He would love to tear down the church. Oh, if we can get these people fighting with each other, we can do a thing. We'll call it a church split. And then this church is this people that doesn't like these people, and they start a new church. And then this church starts a new church. And I mean, we're a new church too, but we're not really a church split. So if you're like, whoa, that's pot calling the kettle black. But this thing happens. Or maybe we can just make these people sit there and those people sit there and they never talk to each other. Like, that kind of stuff pulls the church apart, and then the people out there going like, yep, that's why I'm not a part of a church. That's why I don't want any of that Jesus. Boy, he looks great to you, doesn't he? He says, don't let the sun go down while you're angry. Don't give the devil a foothold. Over in Hebrews, we don't know who wrote the book of Hebrews. It looks like it could be Paul, but it's a letter to Jewish followers of Jesus. And in Hebrews chapter 3, he says, be careful then, dear brothers and sisters. Make sure that your own hearts are not evil and unbelieving. And I should pause here and say, all of Hebrews chapter 3 is this illustration about Moses and the Israelites disobeying God in the wilderness. So this is literally talking about what we're talking about in this series. But he goes on in there, he says, be careful then, dear brothers and sisters. Make sure that your own hearts are not evil and unbelieving, turning you away from the living God. He says, make sure, you know, keep an eye on each other. By the way, this was not in my original notes. Keep an eye on each other. And he says, you must warn each other every day just warned, like, hey, are we okay? Are you good? Are we good? Am I good? Is this good? I felt like there was a little tension there. Oh, no, sorry. It was something I ate. I was just actually belching as I was talking to you. And it has nothing to do with you. But he says, warn each other every day. Well, how often is that? Well, if it's called today, that's when you're supposed to do it. Not tomorrow, today. And this would have been great if it was last week because it was Groundhog Day. Every day was today for Bill Murray. But he says, while it's called today, you need to deal with it. Why? So that none of you will be deceived by sin and hardened against God. The writer of Hebrews says, deal with the stuff. Deal with it now. And if you can diffuse that, if you can pull that element out of the equation, then you don't have to worry about the reaction. Because there isn't any anger. There aren't people that are badgering you. You're not badgering them. You don't feel this built up resentment over time. No, you've gotten that element out of there. And so it's a commitment. It's a commitment to say that I'm going to deal with anger today, to avoid unfair badgering. I'm going to deal with anger today. And that's a commitment. You have to decide that. And we are not a great people to do that. I mean, I don't mean you and me, but just people. It's a lot easier to throw something on Facebook than to actually deal with a person. You know, and the other thing, too, is that a lot of times we don't want to deal with a person because feelings might get hurt. But I would just say that your feelings are going to get hurt way more if you don't actually address an issue that you have with them or that they have with you. And this isn't in the notes either, but Jesus says, you know, if you're leaving a gift at the altar and realize someone has something against you, we talked about this during the United States series. If you realize someone has something against you, you need to stop worshiping and go to them and fix it. Not just if you have something against them. The point is that we need to make the commitment to deal with anger today. Diffuse that part of the situation. Get that element out of there. And then you don't have to worry about the reaction. The second thing is that if you want to avoid unintentional listening, it's going to require an accomplishment. Something that you need to do. And that is, listen first, talk less, anger not. Sounds a little Yoda-ish. Listen first, talk less, anger not. That wasn't a really good Yoda voice, but you with me, right? Okay. Listen first, talk less, anger not. You need to say, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to be a person that listens first. And I will say that a lot of times when we misunderstand something, when we end up in a fight, when we end up with a reaction, a lot of times it's simply miscommunication. It's misunderstanding. Again, it's you going, that's fine. Well, wait, what did you mean by that's fine? Miscommunication. James says this way, and we did a series on the book of James called Dupes a couple of years ago. That's on the slide if you want to read and follow along with the entire book of James. But in James chapter 1, verse 19, James writes this. He says, understand this, my dear brothers and sisters. You must all be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to get angry. He says, be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to get angry. And we are not. We are usually, and honestly, most of the time, and maybe I'm just a really bad person, which I am, and that's why I need Jesus. But I'm usually fast to get angry, quick to talk, and I don't care what you have to say because I'm mad. But James says we need to be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to get angry. And how does that work? If we're quick to listen, we actually pause. What do we need to do? Shut up and listen. What are they saying? Why are they saying it? And again, not that it's an excuse for them, but maybe there's more to the story. Maybe there's more going on behind the scenes that you don't realize, but you're so quick to get angry that you don't even think about what might be happening. And I shared this story before about a number of years ago. We went with the Gensels to the Blue and White game. Are they still doing that this year? I heard they might be getting rid of those things because of like the NIL stuff and the portal, transfer portal. Anyway, but we went to the Blue and White game, and there was this huge line of traffic to Beaver Stadium getting off of the exit. And the exit that, you know, if you get off there, you go around that big big long loop, and you go past the hospital, and then you kind of go up, and there's on the left the baseball stadium, and then Beaver Stadium, and kind of the back. So you kind of go down that way. And I remember we're waiting in this long line of traffic, and we're waiting slow, and this car comes flying down the shoulder. Like, what? What are you doing? Kind of jerk. Like, it makes you want to go, like, get in their way, maybe run into them a little bit. Like, I'm old, I've got good insurance. So, like what? It just kind of grates on you, and you're like, oh, what's this person doing? You get angry, you get upset, and then you watch as they go all the way around that loop past all those cars. They're such jerks. And they keep going past that whole line and then turn left into the ER. And suddenly you're like, oh, there was more to the story. And we need to be quick to listen. We need to be ones that say, okay, how can I listen? And again, it's intentional. A lot of times, we get angry just because we misunderstood what they were saying. We misunderstood. We just automatically assumed that. And a lot of that comes from our baggage, from our own history, from our experience with our parents, from our experience with other relationships where we're like, oh, when you said that, you know, we talk about a trigger. And that's a real thing, but you know what? We can avoid the trigger if we just shut up and listen first. Just listen. Just listen. Just listen. And doing it in an intentional way. And, you know, here's a great thing to do. If you want to listen better, ask questions. And if you don't know what questions to ask, I'll give you, I think it's six. Who, what, where, when, why, how. Yeah, it's six. Okay, when you said this, wait, who are you talking about? Oh, I was talking about this guy at work that, man, he's just so mean to everybody. Like, oh, I thought you were talking about me. Like, suddenly, whoosh, diffused, right? Suddenly the element isn't there, and so there's no reaction. What? What are you talking about? Where are we talking about this situation? Oh, I was doing a stand-up comedy routine when I said that. It was all part of a joke. I didn't realize you took it seriously. Like, whew, diffused. Who, what, where, when, why? Why do you feel this way? Oh, because when I was little, my dad said that to me every time, right before he would beat me. That, okay, all right. I'm sorry I said that. I'll avoid that in the future. But it requires an accomplishment to listen first, talk less, and anger not. And all these things, by the way, there's on the slideshow loop. We did two series. One was called Can You Feel It? Way back in the day. I think it's up there somewhere. And it was all about emotions, and 1 week was all about anger. You can find that on the slideshow loop. Also, we did a series called Rotten just a few months ago. And one of the rotten, the acts of the sinful nature that we looked at was anger, and we spent the whole week in that looking at the rot in anger that you can find on our website as well. It's also on that slideshow loop. But the accomplishment is that we choose to listen first, talk less, and anger not. And that's an accomplishment. It's something we have to do. It doesn't accidentally happen. You have to say, okay, I'm going to take a moment. I'm going to pause, and I'm going to listen to what you have to say. And not respond. And not talk. And let me just say this, too. There's a difference. There's one thing, there's listening. When you are intentional and you're listening to what they are, the words that are coming in, there's also another thing that, again, I'm a bad person, you're not, you're wonderful, but that people do, and that is we just aren't really listening, we're just waiting until we can say what we want to say. So, Well, you don't realize, and we start this, we didn't even listen to what they were saying, we were just waiting to share. And, he always reminded me of like middle school lunch table where it was like, well, my dad, one day he went outside and there were three dogs coming near him and they were about to attack him and said, stop. And they stopped and ran away. And while they're telling that story, like, oh yeah, well, my dad had seven bears come up to him and he didn't even say stop. He flicked one in the nose and it ran away and took all his friends with him. And the next person's like, oh yeah. And like, no one's listening to what they're actually saying. You're just trying to say, oh, I want to get my story in. I want to get my story in. And that's what happens a lot of times when we don't listen first, because we want to get back and say, well, here's my piece. Here's why you're wrong. And I'll just be straight. Kendra often will say, I'm not finished talking. And not in a rude way. She's not like, I'm not finished. But like, I'll start to respond and realize that she hasn't actually finished what she's saying. And when she finishes what she's saying, Like, oh, you were actually complimenting me. And I was getting upset. Like, think about that. It's an accomplishment. It's something we do. We listen first, talk less, and anger not. And so getting rid of that element diffuses the reaction. You don't have that reaction because now you're not worried about getting angry because you're just listening. And you realize that what you were all upset about really wasn't something worth being upset about. And then the third thing that we can do to avoid the reaction is to avoiding uncontrolled feeling. How do we deal with being unhinged? How do we deal with out of control emotions? It requires a mindset. And the mindset, this just means, this is a background. A mindset says that God's holiness is more important than your rightness. Because we're really good at justifying why they deserve what you just said, or why they deserve what you just did to them. And what you did or what you said, if it was an encouragement, and hey, can I tell you about Jesus? Okay, you're good. But typically, it's us doing something that's wrong, but we're like, well, they deserved it. They did it first. And as Moses found out, God's holiness is more important than him being right. Well, God, these people were complaining. The last time we did this, I had to hit the rock. You know, my sister died. Like, there's all this stuff going on, and give me a break. And God says, no, I'm not giving you a break because I am holy, and my holiness is more important than your excuses, than your rightness. And James continues on in James chapter 1, in verse 20. He says, after he talks about slow to speak, slow to get angry, he says, human anger does not produce the righteousness God desires. And so, just as a pause, he says that no matter how justified you think you are, no matter how right you are, no matter how much you have a good reason for that, that's not getting you closer to being like Jesus. That's not what God desires. And you might say, well, wait a second. But Jesus got angry. And we just read that Paul said, in your anger, do not sin. And so the answer is absolutely. Jesus got angry. I mean, dude flipped tables in the temple. He broke out a cord and started whipping people, not physically, but whipping to get them out of the temple because they had turned the temple of worship into a place to cheat and make money. And so Jesus drove them out, but he did not sin. So yes, it is possible to be angry and not sin. And we can be angry at things. We can be angry at the brokenness of the world. And we can be angry at that hurt. And in our mindset, we go like, oh, God, why would you allow this? Why is there so much hurt? God, why don't you do something about it? And of course, as we said last week, God says, I did. I sent my son. And he's coming back, and this is going to be good. So it's possible to be angry and not sin. But most of the time we're not that way. Most of the time we're not Jesus. Most of the time, no, we're just straight up sinning too. And it feels good. It feels good to get that reaction out and see get what's coming to them. And so James says that human anger, it's not pretty, and it says human anger. Not righteous anger, not Jesus anger, human anger, on our own. It's not getting us to be more like Jesus. It's not getting us to be more like God. It's not producing the righteousness that God desires. It's usually just a sinful reaction to our circumstances. And so if we want to avoid the reaction, if we don't want to get to that spot where we're Moses and we blow up and suddenly we've lost out on something because of our disobedience, then we can avoid uncontrolled feeling with that mindset. Next slide. That God's holiness is more important than your rightness. And we just need to ingrain that into our brains. That no matter how I feel in this moment, how justified it feels, no, how right I am, you know what? There's still no excuse for me to disobey God. There's still no excuse for me to not do what God has told me to do or to live how God has told me to live. And let me just be straight. And we talked about this in the Rotten series about anger. But Jesus was being nailed to a cross for something he did not do, for something he did not deserve. And we did a whole series, it's not on the slide, called The Trials. And we looked at the trials of Jesus before his execution, and they were all a sham. They were all invented things that people made up to get him to that cross to die. And he's on the cross, being nailed to the cross, the spikes going through his wrists and his feet. And his response is, God, kill them all. Take them out, because I've got the power. No, Jesus' response was, Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. And maybe your response to anger, your response to say that God's holiness is more important than your rightness, might be just the piece. It might be just the tipping point on that scale that that person goes, wow, why would you forgive me? Wow, why wouldn't you take revenge? And you could say, let me tell you about my Jesus. And you might be the reason that someone's eternity changes. Even though you were right and you were justified in doing that thing. But if you said, no, God's holiness is more important than your rightness, if that's our mindset, that might be the thing that brings someone to Jesus. That might be the thing that transforms someone's life and their eternity. And so if you're a person that tends to do this, whatever that is, fight, flight, fright, anger, yelling, shutting down, running away and crying, whatever your reaction tends to be, and we're like, I can't avoid that. On some level, you can't, all these pieces are going to lead to that reaction. But if you get rid of the elements, you don't have to worry about the reaction as much. And say, okay, I'm going to deal with anger today. I'm going to be committed. I'm committing to dealing with anger today. I'm committing to that today. And then later today, you're going to have an issue and you're going to get upset about something. And you'll be like, no, I'll do that tomorrow. Nope, that's not a commitment. You're going to deal with it today. And you're going to avoid unintentional listening. You're going to accomplish. What you're going to do is listen first, talk less, anger not. That's what you're going to do. And then to avoid the uncontrolled feeling, you need to have that mindset that says God's holiness is more important than your rightness. God's holiness is more important than my rightness. Because when you're stuck with frustration, you should avoid reaction. For Moses, he didn't avoid reaction, and it cost him the promised land. Now, God isn't going to kick you out of heaven if you're a believer in Jesus. That's not going to happen. That's not possible. But there are definite consequences to our sin. And we talked about that last week. There might be things that are being changed because of your sin. There might be relationships that could be healed, but your sin is holding it back. There might be something that God wants to offer you, or a direction that he wants to take you, or something he wants to do, and we're unwilling to avoid reaction. And so we're going to miss out. And so the best thing to do is get rid of the elements. Get rid of the things that cause the reaction, so that we can obey him. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for your love for us. Thank you that you were not satisfied with us in our sin, and that you sent Jesus to take the punishment. And God, I pray, as we live in this human sinful world, that you would help us to avoid the reaction in the midst of frustration, in the midst of people that are difficult, in the midst of situations that are hard, in the midst of hospital diagnoses that are not what we want to hear, in the midst of issues with our jobs, in the midst of troubles with our vehicles, in all those things, it's easy to be frustrated and react. And God, I pray that you, by your Holy Spirit living in us, would help us to avoid the reaction, not just in that moment, but to deal with the elements that are causing it. And help us to be committed to dealing with anger each day. And help us to accomplish listening first and speaking less. And God, give us the mindset that your holiness is more important than our justified, our rightness, our good excuses. Help us to do those things so that we can avoid the reaction and grow and to be more and more like Jesus. And to watch you work through that in the relationships, in the situations, in the circumstances around us. Thank you for the example of Moses, the sad example of Moses in this situation. God, I pray that we would learn from it. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.